This is Encounters, a dialogue that brings you multifaceted life stories you don't want to miss.
Movie is one of the things, and I try to pick topics that are culturally divisive, that are subject to different interpretations in the East and the West. And for me, that's really a cause for joy, because there's so much to be said. And I was born in China, grew up here, and I studied English. But when I switched to the other side, I feel that, of course, in the United States, there are so many people who can write English much better than I do. But a lot of them are probably among the ones who know China much better. I feel that I'm straddling the two cultures, which I love equally. And it's not as simple as saying, oh, we Chinese use chopsticks, you Westerners use knife and fork. It's not that simple. Very often, just like the language, it's not translatable. One word can become a dozen different words in another language. One concept, the same thing. There are a lot of words and concepts that have no equivalence in the other language. Promoting great culture to another culture, to people who want to broaden their horizon and to find wonderful things from all over the world, it's a very satisfying thing for me.
Hello and welcome to Encounters. I'm your host, Man Ling. My guest today is Raymond Zhou. He is known to the Chinese public as a film critic, but he prefers to define himself as an interpreter of cultural differences. Raymond grew up in a small town in East China's Zhejiang province. After graduating from Sun Yat-sen University in Guangzhou with a master's degree in English literature, he went to the United States for further study. During his 15 years in the U.S., Raymond was exposed to Broadway musicals and Hollywood movies, along with the American style of arts and entertainment criticism, which has been a strong influence on his writing style. A prolific writer, Raymond has published thousands of reviews in English and Chinese over the past 20 years. He's one of the few commentators in China who has studied both Chinese and Western films, drama, classical music, literature, and social culture. In today's program, Raymond and I talk about the role that film plays in cross-cultural communications and how Chinese movies can be improved to reach a larger international audience. Stay tuned for more. When you are recommending what is the best representative of China to peers, right, critics, okay, to the movie industry outside of China, you were an insider,
yes,
right? Because if you're amateur, then you don't know which one to pick. But at the same time, when you are penning down ideas on papers, you try to promote what is good in the film industry to the masses. So you are actually taking up on your shoulder two roles.
Yes.
Is it a communicator?
Yes. Some people would definitely call it a communicator.
Movie is only your tool to communicate, right?
Movie is one of the things. When I was writing the weekly column for China Daily, I did that for like more than a dozen years. And I try to pick topics that are culturally divisive, that are subject to different interpretations in the East and the West.
Debatable.
And for me, that's really a cause for joy, because there's so much to be said. And I was born in China, grew up here, and I studied English. But when I switched to the other side, I feel that, of course, in the United States, there are so many people who can write English much better than I do, but a lot of them are probably among the ones who know China much better.
It's not the language, but it's the ideas.
Yeah, it starts from the language.
Yeah.
It goes much more beyond language. Because even if it comes to language, there's so much, as you said, debatable. There's very often, there's no right and wrong. Take the English translation of 4两拨千斤 in the new Disney movie Mulan.
Yeah.
It's translated into 4 ounces can move 1,000 pounds. It's one of the ways. It's not the only way.
By the way, do you think Mulan is a success?
Of course, it's not a success. I watched it on the opening day here.
Okay.
I wrote a piece very much in defense of it. You know, it's not a good movie, but it's not a bad movie. It's mediocre.
Mediocre.
It's the shared fate that befalls almost most of genre films, blockbusters from Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
It's hundreds of them are like that because it's so formulaic. There's a formula that they follow.
Okay.
So if you dissect them, everything passes the grade. You put them together, it's so predictable. It's not risk-taking enough. So if you compare this one, the live-action one, with the cartoon one.
I love the cartoon better.
Nowadays, everyone is saying they love the cartoon better, but the cartoon one took huge risks by creating the comic role of Mushu Dragon. If you had asked...
So you mean the live person one is not brave enough?
It's not brave enough. A lot of criticism that comes from China say it's too brave, it veered too much away from the Chinese way of telling stories. No, it's the opposite. I think they should be real artists and take risks, not be afraid of offending this market or that market.
Thinking too much about practical purposes.
Yeah, they think,
we should
please the Chinese market. Mm. We should please this market.
Yeah.
When you think about pleasing so many different market segments, you end up pleasing no one.
So that means not creative enough.
Not creative enough. Because the Mushu Dragon is a very good example. If you had asked permission from a Chinese expert, he would laugh. Because in our minds, a dragon is huge. A Mushu Dragon is very small.
Mm-hmm.
He's a comic foil, a comic role. We didn't really take to the animation right away. It really started to grow on us like with several years.
Yes.
But because that movie had a streak of inventiveness,
yes.
So we got something new from the movie other than the kind of things we can get from the original poem.
Because Hua Mulan is such a classic image.
Yeah.
Every Chinese knows it.
Yeah.
You have to bring something new.
Yeah.
So when I was watched the live one, I was like always an outsider watching, this is it, this is it. And I'm doing some odd things, you know, because it didn't really attract it into the mood and the thing. You know, I was not really touched. Only in a few scenes. Mm-hmm. But by the way, let's talk about when you are a movie critic writing both in Chinese and English. So when you write in Chinese, mostly you are introducing the Western, especially the Hollywood movies to the Chinese readers. And then if you're writing in English, that means you're introducing Chinese movies to the outside world.
Not just Chinese movies. I try to pick out the kind of things that are quintessentially culturally Chinese.
Culturally Chinese.
And try to make them more understandable and relatable to a Western audience.
Chinese society, from your comments, your writing.
Yeah, maybe not for the general public in the West, but for those people who, say, are educated, have at least a college degree, and who are
interested in Chinese
culture, right?
Just tell me how you handle it, because if it's the same piece of movie, for example, we talked about Farewell, My Concubine. If you're going to write two pieces, one in Chinese and one in English, what different angles and different perspectives you will try to do the subtle handling?
Mm-hmm.
How?
The one point that I would spend much more time in English is a male actor playing female roles.
You have to explain,
have to explain, and that's why it happened, right? And I will probably borrow examples from Shakespeare's theater, like Elizabethan theater, during which time teenage boys played female roles.
Yes.
No actresses were allowed on stage.
So humanities are the same, right?
But there's still something different,
uh-huh.
because in this movie, it spends a lot of screen time on driving to the point, driving home the point that you have to internalize, an actor has to internalize the femininity of the roles in order to be really well.
Yes.
While on Elizabethan stage, you don't need to do that. You, a pretty boy becomes a gorgeous woman on stage and off stage, you're back to the boy again, right?
So it's the difference between stage performing and movies.
Yeah, and the Peking opera is not an art of realism. Usually, logically, you don't need to do that. But the greatest artists, they cherish themselves on like making every cell on their body
real.
Be identified with that role. Mm. And that including the male actors playing female roles. So that was, and probably still is, an art form that's uniquely Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's the practice itself is shared among a lot of cultures. You know, the Japanese kabuki is also all male playing female roles. And as I said, Elizabethan theater in England, I'm sure there are other cultures and other countries that have the same kind of tradition, similar tradition, but there is something uniquely Chinese and you have to explain it. And for the Chinese readers, it's a given. You don't need to really go to delve deep. You just mention it in passing. And that's the kind of things I want to do really well because I feel that I'm straddling the two cultures, which I love equally. And it's not as simple as saying, oh, we Chinese use chopsticks, you Westerners use knife and fork. It's not that simple. Very often, just like the language, it's not translatable. One word can become a dozen different words in another language.
Yes.
One concept, the same thing. There are a lot of words and concepts that have no equivalents in the other language, and vice versa.
Yes, indeed. Which language you feel more comfortable in writing?
It really depends on the subject matter.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
For a lot of my plays, I wrote the first draft in English, and then after I developed it to a certain stage, I rewrite it in Chinese, or vice versa.
Okay, I find when I was asked to translate my own English article into Chinese, I overestimated myself. I think this is my thoughts, right? Written down only in English. So if it should be me, myself, translate. And when I was translating it, it was totally a different. You know, if I write in Chinese, I wouldn't use the Chinese translation I'm going to use. It's thinking in Chinese would be totally different. So maybe you're right. Depend on
That really brings us to the nature of translation. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people feel that you have to be loyal, be true to the original words and phrases in order to have a good version in the other language. But for me, the same experience thing happened to me when I was translating my own writing.
Yeah.
And I felt that I would divert. I will give you one example. There's one I wrote in, there's a line that one person asked the other said whether he's related to another person because they share the same name. Mm-hmm. And that person said, maybe 300 years ago, we were related. And for Chinese, it's very easy to understand. But when I was translating this line into English, I translated it into, we happen to have the same surname.
Yeah.
I didn't say we could be related 300 years ago because it would sound like nonsense to a Western reader because we have fewer surnames in Chinese, especially if you have a very common surname like Wang and Zhang, people would not take it that you are related. But if you have a very unique surname, people assume that, oh, could you be related? But it's not the same kind of reaction that you would get if it happened in an English-speaking country. So that's the thing that I was very conscious that, oh, I will not translate this line literally.
Yeah, indeed.
I would pick a line that an English speaker would probably say in the same situation.
Yes, indeed. So differently, you enjoyed playing games in writing different articles for different audiences. Okay, let's talk about the industrialization of Chinese movie industry. Mm-hmm. Of course, we need to industrialize our movie when everything is going to be produced according to standards, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I think we should veer, like you said, from that industrialized process in order to really have creative movies coming out. If we always follow a assembly line. Mm-hmm. I don't think there will be creativity. So a big question, are you proud that China has become the second largest consuming market of world movies, but we are not one of the greatest movie maker country?
I'm proud of all the progresses that
proud
have been,
is not a word.
That have been made in the film industry in China in the past two decades. For a very long time, it's the commercial movies, the so-called commercial movies, genre pictures, that have eluded us, because this formula of movie making was not actually taught in schools. Our schools were trying to bring up or to train so-called film masters, while masters cannot really be trained. Masters are mostly
born.
Born or raised in their own environment. It's always the art and the craft. There's this contradiction and a conflict between the art part and the craft part. And
so you mean the craft part is something that
very
we
weak.
Miss?
And right now, it's very funny. Right now, it's like the art part has been ignored while the craft part has too much art. It's like when you are supposed to make a craft movie, those people want to be artists. They want to show what they have.
Because that represents higher standards of movie art, right?
Yes.
Everybody wants to be noble at the highest echelon of things.
Yes.
And then, okay, there is a culture thing. It just happens to me that we Chinese people in our blood, we look down upon business.
We look down upon
commercial
business and also craft.
Yeah.
Because the people who built the Forbidden City were craftsmen. Mm-hmm. They didn't even left their
names,
right? Yeah. But the paintings, the Chinese scroll paintings, were considered art. So we knew who painted them.
Names of
So we look up to them. So this dichotomy has existed for thousands of years.
Hmm.
And the same thing in other countries. But the good thing in Hollywood is they take their craft very seriously. And they want to make craft really well, while they acknowledge that art is something that on top of craft. Art does not come naturally. Somebody have it, somebody don't have it. It
takes so much to nurture.
And much of it is inborn. Either you're born with it, or you have it or don't, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So if you want to create art, you are given a lot of liberty, but not a high budget. If you are supposed to make a craft film, you're given a certain budget, but you are not given a lot of freedom. You're given very, very limited freedom.
Uh-huh.
Because you have to follow the orders.
Do you think this is one of the main reasons that stand in the way of China's movie industry's development?
Exactly. Because our film industry is still a cottage industry. It's like a 铁匠铺, a blacksmith thing. You can turn out very well crafted things, but you cannot do it on assembly line. You cannot have it roll off an assembly line because you don't have this mechanism. This mechanism has to be equipped with
good
machinery and well-trained people who are willing to do it as craftsmen.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong being a craft people.
But if we keep looking down upon craft, like you said, or craftsmen or artisans instead of artists, then our industrialized movie industry will have a long way to go. Because nobody wants to be a craftsman. Everybody wants to be a master.
In the past couple of years, actually starting from 2012, when Lost in Thailand came out, that was a very well-crafted film. It's not art, it's craft, and it was well received.
But it's watchable.
It's watchable.
But did you laugh when you watched Lost in Thailand?
I laughed. And also, I thought it really contained a zeitgeist. Because this conflict between the working class and the white collar really captured the spirit of our times.
And now I think the COVID-19 stopped another of Xu Zhen's lost film, I call it. Lost the series. It's lost in Russia, right?
Yes.
Have you ever watched it?
Yeah, I watched it online.
It still has the momentum?
No, it veered a little bit too much towards drama. I think he wanted to say something.
So he's putting a lot of artistic stuff into it now.
Yes, that's why the public did not love it. I mean, by training, he was supposed to be an artist. He's not going to be contented with making Lost in Thailand.
It's not wrong for Shi Zhen to strive to be an artist. Yeah. But I wish that, as you pointed out, a very good point made, that we can respect the craft more in the future.
Or you can, I mean, you can follow the career paths of people like Spielberg, who would make one specific commercial film, like the dinosaur film, right? Jurassic Park series.
Yeah.
Just to make money.
Yeah.
And then just turn
turn away.
Away and make Schindler's List.
Yes, which
he thought he would never make any money.
Oh, that's one of my favorite.
Yeah, it's from his heart, right?
Yeah.
Of course, those two examples are on the two sides of the spectrum.
But this could happen on one person. It's a blessing. It's a gift.
Yes.
It cannot really happen on everybody. And one day, one foreigner talked to me. He is an expert in China affairs. He said, if you guys want to make China known to the rest of the world, make good movies. Movies talks better.
Yes.
You know, with people. If they watch the movie, they love your culture, they will immediately fall in love with Chinese culture. But the thing is that it's quite a pity that our movie industries, like you said, there are a lot of traditional views and old ways of doing things stand in the way of us producing great works for the whole world.
We could produce great works like Farewell My Concubine, but we are still not able to do movies like the Marvel Pictures. It's something that we have to conscientiously train ourselves for, and I think it will come with the next generation, because in the past couple of years I have seen a few examples that I intuitively have a feeling that are able to go outside China and gain a mainstream audience.
For example,
Nurja.
I love it.
Yeah, I think Nurja is a traditional story, but the theme is universal.
Yeah, I love
it's fighting with fate, and all the details are easily translatable. Unlike the Mulan story, this one, I mean, if Nurja had got the distribution powers of a Disney, it could be a world phenomenon.
I agree with you.
But it's very rare.
But our adaptation of the Monkey King story seems to me failed.
Monkey King is the very first attempt and has been tried several times with varying degrees of success, but Monkey King is taken for granted.
It's like testing the water.
Testing the water. And Monkey King has rebelliousness, a young hero. It's funny. It has got humor. And it's ready-made for the world market, right? But it's the balance between a traditional approach and a new approach that's very hard to keep. But Nurja is much less known. It has got a great classic animation from 1979, which
great
is
one.
Yeah, great one, but mostly forgotten. But the new one is so well made, it really took me by storm. I think the studio that made it totally failed at international marketing, because they've got this great product, but they don't know how to sell it outside China. The title alone is wrong. You cannot sell a big picture just by using Nurja. Because by using Nurja, it doesn't mean anything. It
doesn't ring anything.
For a boring audience, it's just a strange name. It doesn't send any signal, right?
Yeah.
So you have to be careful with every little detail, every line of dialogue, and trying to push across, because it has this inbuilt charm that appeal with the world. Had it been made by a Hollywood studio, this one would make billions in the world.
Years ago, director Jia Zhangke has put aside some money to support independent critical movie reviews. And he commented on you, your importance to the movie industry, because you know Hollywood very well by researching and by, I call it, movie mover. You watch them firsthand on the spot, and then you introduce them, move this movie into this country and to let more people to be accessible to them. He said, because of that part, You are uniquely important and cannot be spared. That's at that time. But now, the social media platforms opened a lot of gates for people, and things have changed. That time, Jia Zhangke said, you're indispensable, and you have contributed so much. But now, do you think you can still continue to contributing?
I think I would continue writing, but I think the focus, the emphasis could be shifting. And I feel the need for professional writers like me, I see myself as a professional writer, is we'll stick around for a long time. Say, my strength is uniquely in cross-cultural interpretation, and that requires a very special position, say, spending 15 or 17 years in another country and knowing the language and expressing myself in that language, and still coming back to China and my home country and with a love for Chinese culture that only a Chinese can have. So to talk about things Chinese but in the English language is a very unique thing, and vice versa. I write in Chinese about Hollywood, its history, and all the kind of strange things and funny things that happened that shaped them, and why it has this dominance in world cinema for 100 years, not just for the past 20 years, for 100 years, and what we can learn from them. You know, why great Chinese movies cannot travel abroad and gain a mainstream audience.
Yeah.
Because we don't distinguish between the mainstream audience and an art house circle. Like winning an award from Europe and have like 3,000 people loving it. Why a Hollywood movie would have 30 million, 300 million people in the audience. So those are the kind of things that I feel I'm uniquely qualified for and I'd love to do. And promoting great culture to another culture, to people who want to broaden their horizon and to find wonderful things from all over the world. It's a very satisfying thing for me.
So it seems to me that the silver lining of this being threatened by social media thing is that there is still a position, a need of people like us who can advise, who can tell them, maybe we should do it this way.
Only if they would listen.
Yeah. So we keep on doing our job.
Yes.
Creative writing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, anything in any capacity that I can.
Yeah. So thank you so much for the interview.
My pleasure.
And good luck for your future. You know, I look forward to good articles from you.
Thank
Not
you.
Good articles, but reviews and everything.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Raymond believes that movies are one of the most direct and vivid ways of communicating across cultures. Through his articles, he hopes to introduce great movies and silver screen icons to people who are keen to broaden their horizon with stories from around the world. And that's the end of our show. I'm Man Ling. Thank you for joining me. Be sure to visit chinaplus.cr.cn and look for Encounters, where you will find other episodes of the show, along with Man Ling's journals about our interviews.